Very excited about the next guest. He's here in studio. He's a regular visitor to Cairns based in Sydney, and it's a great pleasure to have him on The King Review, the launch show today. Ian Robertson is the National Managing Partner from Holding Redlich, a national law firm. Ian, apart from his career in the law, has done a whole range of things, has sat on a whole range of state and national boards over many decades in professional life across Australia. Ian, welcome to the King Review.
Good afternoon, Gavin. It's great to be here.
Now, for those listeners who may not know much about Holding Redlich, you're a national firm. You're based in Sydney, but offices in Melbourne and Brisbane. But you only moved to Cairns recently. Just tell us a little bit about, I think it's always interesting for Cairns people to know national firms. What do they see in Cairns? Why make that investment in our city?
Well, we were starting to get some work from here, property work, construction, some stuff around local government. And we were trying to service that from Brisbane, which sort of worked all right. But then I had a look at the map and I realised that Cairns is further from Brisbane than Melbourne is.
Which a lot of people in capital cities don't often realise.
You tend to think sort of Brisbane, Cairns, they must be kind of next door.
Can you just duck down the road to Townsville and pick this up for me?
Yeah, all of that.
It's 6 hours away. Yeah.
So if we were going to properly service those clients, I think we needed to be here. So we opened a small office and things have gone, frankly, a great deal better than we thought. We've had to significantly expand. We're now four times bigger than we thought we'd be. And it's going well. Starting any business is always got a couple of challenges, but we've been lucky to get great people led by a really prominent local lawyer, Ranjit Singh. And we have been welcomed. It's important to us to be part of the local community. Everybody we employ is from here, and we'll keep it that way. We're a firm that's basically about business and also about the three tiers of government. Strong business here is, of course, anything to do with property, construction and hospitality, and there's quite a lot of activity in the public sector in various ways. I mean, apart from being a really nice place, I think Cairns has got so much opportunity. It's obviously underpinned by tourism, but there's so much else. And we have listened to what state and federal governments have said about developing far north Queensland. And it seems to me that Cairns will play an important role in that.
You see potential in the city? Because there's obviously a lot of concern at the moment with COVID and tourism collapse, JobKeeper coming off at the end of March. But you see, I guess, from almost that outsider perspective, that helicopter view, if you like, you see potential for the city and our economy going forward?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, obviously, tourism has been badly knocked around by COVID. And I guess that may continue to be a problem until we've got a heavily vaccinated population. But open borders will obviously help. And there's been some terrific investment. I mean, I'm staying at Flynn, one of the three Crystalbrook hotels, and that is an absolutely first-class place. Doesn't have many people in at the moment. I look forward to them filling it up. I'm sure they do too. And that's just in the 3 years that we've been here. I've noticed quite a lot of development. I mean, the hotels speak for themselves, but there are new restaurants, there's a performing arts complex and so on. These are all good things, and I think these are all things that will attract people to Cairns. Obviously, when international travel returns, I guess a priority is to try to have more direct international flights into Cairns Airport. But I guess that's a while off.
Can you see the potential? I mean, you've got hundreds of staff along the Eastern Seaboard. Could you see big corporates potentially allowing staff, now that we know we can all work from home, in some professions we can work from anywhere, do you see Cairns being able to capitalise on some almost those COVID evacuees, if you like, where so long as they have access to high-speed internet, they can still do their jobs? Is there scope for Cairns, one of my pet topics, is there scope for Cairns to capitalise on those COVID evacuees, boost our population, bring in perhaps a higher skill level of worker? Would corporates be of that mindset, do you think?
I would think so, but I think a lot depends on the type of business that you're in. I mean, our view is that, as a law firm, that the vast majority of our people will work in the office the vast majority of the time. It just works best that way. But there'll be a lot more remote working than there's ever been before. And certainly the kind of technologies we're using mean that we can do work for national clients in Cairns and do it seamlessly. And we will do more of that. So, and I mean, in the case of law at least, James Cook University produces great people. What we hope is one of our attractions will be that they can work for us in Cairns doing work for major national corporations. And we hope that will be attractive to lawyers.
Now, we'll move away from Cairns and let's talk a little bit about your really incredible career over many, many decades. You were awarded the Order of Australia.
I think they call it Officer of the Order of Australia. It means AO, I think.
AO. So, but also I was, apart from the many boards that you've sat on over the years, I was very interested to hear that you were Bob Hawke's personal lawyer in his post-political career. Can you tell us a little bit? I don't know how much you're allowed to talk about, but you know what was Hawke like? I think listeners will be very, you know, he's obviously almost a mythical hero in some senses in Australia, but what was the man behind the myth really like?
Well, he'd traditionally been a client of Holding Redlich for a long period, and when he retired from politics, it was decided, or he decided and the firm agreed, that he should have a commercial lawyer to help him with consulting agreements and things of that nature. And I, over time, got to know him extremely well. We travelled together a number of times, particularly to China. I think the legend is very much the reality. An incredibly smart man, incredibly smart. But I think the reason people warmed to him so much is that he really liked people, and it was genuine. It wasn't forced. And, you know, a small anecdote, although I wasn't actually there, but a few years ago now, he was at a conference in Melbourne and his car and driver hadn't showed up at the end. And a young bloke goes past in a ute and says, "G'day, Bob, you're fabulous." And Bob says, "Well, if I'm so fabulous, how about giving me a lift to my hotel?" So to the complete horror of the police and security people, Bob gets in this guy's ute.
Complete stranger.
Complete stranger, never seen him before in his life. And the guy gives him a lift to his hotel while he's on the phone to his mate saying, "You won't believe who I've got in the car." And that's sort of Bob Hawke. I've walked down streets of Australia with Bob. And people yell out of car windows and say, "Good on you, Bob." I don't think any other retired politician would have that kind of experience. The other thing is, very smart. And one of the things about Bob is when he was doing a media interview, he refused to know what the questions would be because he said if he knew in advance what the questions were, his answers would not sound authentic. It would sound like he's making it up. But, of course, you've got to be really smart to do that. You've really got to know your subject matter. And he was good at that.
And there were a few renditions, I understand, of Waltzing Matilda.
Yes, I have. Bob, unlike me, can sing. I used to get dragged in on the chorus, but I have sung Waltzing Matilda more than a few occasions, mainly in China with Bob, to a whole lot of Chinese who I'm sure were very confused.
What is going on here?
And I don't know that many of their former leaders actually sing at functions, but we have one that does it quite well, had one that does it quite well.
Well, there's a microphone here now, Ian. You're welcome to break out into it.
No, that will be the end of your program. very short-lived career.
Let's not end on the first show.
No.
What did you see in Bob, or what qualities did Bob Hawke have that made him so popular when he was in office and post-office, as opposed to this almost disdain for politicians today? Was it just, I mean, the times are very different. This is what, you know, it's nice to look back with fondness on history and past politicians and talk them up, but the times are incredibly different. I think social media is a big part of that. But was there anything within Bob that you don't see in a lot of political leaders today who have the following and almost the devotion and the leadership that Bob Hawke did?
Well, Bob certainly had the view that, the current crop of leaders globally were not as good as him.
So confidence is important.
Confidence is important. Look, there's a number of things. I mean, he'd had a long apprenticeship. He'd run the unions. He'd been president of the Labor Party. He's a very smart man. He knew the issues. He's right across economics. He had some pretty well-formed views about what government should do, and he also had some pretty well-formed views about the reforms that were needed in Australia. And I think the other thing is, unfortunately, I think some people get into positions of political leadership and their principal objective is to stay there. And if they happen to achieve a few things, well, that's good. Bob, I think, and bearing in mind I was not involved, but in talking to him in later and reading and so on, I think he was very keen to get a lot done. And he was fortunate, I think, and he, although they had a tricky relationship from time to time, he did acknowledge towards the end of his life that Paul Keating was a very important part of that. Mm. And they were a terrific duumvirate, and they got a lot done. Mm. And I've always had the view that history would treat that government very well in terms of the reforms it effected, which most of which should have been done years earlier. Mm. And they really brought Australia into the world, into the modern age, and I think that's the great achievement. Mm. But with it was a guy who innately understood people, and I think was able to bring very sound political judgment as to what could be done and, in some cases, what shouldn't be done.
Mm. And I think perhaps there was a greater sense of bipartisanship in those days where you would still have the to and fro of politics and on the floor of Parliament, but it just seems that these days the sides get further and further apart. The argument and the discussion gets more vitriolic, whereas I think perhaps in those days it just seemed to be a little bit more of the national good. And yes, we'll argue with you and we may disagree, but things seem to happen much more on a bipartisanship level.
Yes, and I think at state and federal levels of politics, the relationship, and I think this is particularly the case at the federal level, the relationship between ministers and departments has got more distant. And I think certainly I believe this to be the case in New South Wales. I'm not where I live. I'm not so familiar with Queensland. And it's an interesting story, which I only heard. Bob's 81st birthday was at home in Northbridge, and Kim Beazley said a few words. And I heard something I didn't know. And interestingly, there were a couple of very senior public servants of Bob's prime ministership era present, quite famous people. But Kim said that when they were elected in 1983, a lot of the people moving from being opposition spokesmen to ministers had advisors, and they wanted to make those people senior staff, chief of staff and all that sort of thing. And Bob called everybody together and said, everyone who's worked for us in opposition should have a job with us in government, but they are not going to be chiefs of staff and very senior advisors. The way that's going to be done is you are going to speak to your department head, and they will nominate those people from their departments. And what Bob achieved is a very effective partnership between ministers, ministerial officers and departments in a way that I think today is a lot more rare. And I think that's a problem. I think use should be made of the public service, who some very talented people, to actually effect change.
Ian Robertson, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in the studio for the very first King Review of 2021. I look forward to catching up with you again next time you're in Cairns.
I look forward to it, Gavin. Thank you.